Welcome to the 7th Northeast Regional Convention. My name is Bernie, and I'm a recovering alcoholic. Hi. We'll start this meeting with a preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men, women, who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. And now if we could just have a moment of silence. And I ask that you join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Okay, now as we know, this is a program of anonymity, and our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain a personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. As far as taping, recording this workshop is concerned, that's not allowed. Tapes are being prepared by professional people, and they will be available about 20 minutes after the workshop. Our topic at this workshop, I guess I'm too tall or this table's too short. Our topic at this workshop is Let the Bum Find Us. And this was selected from the October 76 issue of The Grapevine, and in which the author questions the fine line between attraction and promotion in the AA program, and seems to feel that we can't do enough to help the other suffering alcoholics that are still out there. The panel members who will discuss this question or address this topic are Bob M. here to my right, who has a few 24 hours in the program, who has been involved within the state on state levels, et cetera, and in many groups, and has helped many a soul. Our next speaker is Lucille, who is works in an employee assistance program in one of the major corporations in the state. And our last speaker will be John C., who was with a major insurance company within the state, and who worked on a quote-unquote consultant basis for a while, and is now working on a part-time basis employee assistance program. Our first speaker will be Bob M. Let's welcome Bob.
My name is Bob McPherson, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi. And this title disturbs me because I worked with the bums, and I use the word kindly, and I like them. I've always said that as a segment of society, they live closer to the golden rule than any other part of society, and I never found that they had any trouble finding me. So I don't know about this title. But as a starter, I'd like to suggest that, shall we all for a moment, remember how we found about AA, who told us about it, and how did we know where to go that day that made a difference in our lives? It just didn't happen. It was some, perhaps the best thing is to tell you about my experience. I went to see a doctor in 1945 because I knew I was in trouble with booze, and he listened and he said, well, the only thing I can tell you is to stop drinking. And I said, well, I've tried, but I fall apart. I've used it every day for a long time. It was the only way I felt normal, and I'm in trouble with it. I've tried to stop, but I can't. Can you give me something? And he said, No, I won't give you anything. He said, the whiskey is the oldest, best tranquilizer I know of. It's too bad you've abused it. And I thanked him and left, and I couldn't have expected much more because he was my brother-in-law and we never paid him anyhow. But, but several days later, I had a call from a man who said, my name is Red. Red Wine, and it's a good name for an alcoholic. And we used to confuse drunks, tell them to get a hold of Red Wine. That'll help you. And he said, do your brother-in-law suggest that you might need our help? Are you interested? And I was two things. First, I was very indignant, and yet I was interested because I was in trouble. And that's how I got acquainted with Alcoholics Anonymous. I fumbled around for a few years, bothering everyone. But one day, that was different for me. I knew where to call, and a man believed me. So I don't feel that there's anyone who's hopeless, because one day someone believed me, and I hope I will always remember that. I was sober 2 years before it dawned on me that it would be nice to call my brother-in-law and thank him. Up to then, I thought it had just happened and I had done it. And, you know, after a while, you do get your memory back and you do the right things. I do suggest that, I know that it is important to get as much information out to the public about Alcoholics Anonymous, what it is. But before we do it, let's be sure that we know what we're talking about. Let's read everything we can about AA. Let's tell the real story and the true story, the correct story. Now, we have a tradition that says attraction rather than promotion. But starting with each member of AA, you and I are examples of the thing we're talking about. The best talk, I was told once very early, the best talk I'll ever give is the example I set. And certainly, let us be neat, let us be clean, let us be honest and attractive examples. Traditions are a very important part of Alcoholics Anonymous. I think they're equally as important as the 12 steps because they're to the individual. They're just as important as they are to group unity. I think we should know them, not as rules. The steps and the 12 traditions are not rules. They're not something you take and say, I've done it. It's something we put into our life for the rest of our life and use them daily. It's the best way I know to stay sober and to be able to share with others. I lost my voice the other day, so I wrote this out with the thought that John could read it for me and I'd stand here and make my mouth go. And that would be fun. But in putting these thoughts together, I came across a little thing that I get each month from out in San Jose. quote of H.L. Mencken, whom I loved, "For every problem, there is a solution that is short, simple, logical, and wrong." And if you live that way in AA, you'll be very happy and comfortable and sober. I would like to just take a minute, maybe 45 minutes, to talk to you about my favorite subject in Alcoholics Anonymous. And Bernie, I have no watch, so you pull my coattail when I've done enough, please.
Stand back.
It's behind me. But and that is our need to learn to cooperate and to communicate with the professional community. AA has but one principal purpose, one primary purpose, and that's to carry our message of hope, encouragement to the still sick alcoholic. The hospitals, the doctors, the nurses, psychiatrists, the legal profession, the clergy, many others, can provide the health-giving services so needed by the sick alcoholic. AA does not do any of this. We have one purpose. We are certainly not in competition with any of the professional people or their services, and we are both trying to help the sick alcoholic. So for heaven's sake, let's sit down and talk to each other, let's work together, and the one that benefits will be the sick alcoholic, and isn't that what we're all here for? We need each other, so let's try to be friendly with our friends. And as so often is happening more recently, as there is more and more understanding and education about the illness of alcoholism, and hopefully the stigma is slowly going away. When a hospital which has accepted alcoholics for treatment of their illness of alcoholism asks AA to help as a referral, let us respond. Let us sit down with the staff and the administrators right at the beginning and tell them what AA can do and what AA can't do. Let's have an understanding. Let's have a willingness to cooperate. As an example of what goes wrong once in a while, I give you a very quick one of an intergroup in the West. It received a call from a hospital and said, "We have 5 patients and they would like to go to an AA meeting tonight." And the person calling gave the girl at intergroup the names and said, "Can you pick them up and see that they get to a meeting? Will you get in touch with them?" And the answer was, "So you're still sending us your rejects." And that isn't quite the way to cooperate. It isn't what we found. Most of us found someone willing, someone that believed us. And the only way we can keep what was given to us is to be willing to share it as often as we can, whenever we have the time, when we can afford it, not only in money, but in time with our family. If we do what AA asks us to do within reason, it's the most comfortable way to fully enjoy what Alcoholics Anonymous has to offer. I said I'd talk about anonymity, and I think there's a practical and a spiritual side to this thing. Certainly, we all agree with the tradition that says we maintain our anonymity at the level of press, radio, and television. And this has earned us the respect of the news media. They're surprised because most people love to see their names in print. But they're very pleased to work with us, and they've been great friends to Alcoholics Anonymous. And certainly, I have no right to say to anyone on the outside, "I saw you and you and you at an AA meeting." I respect your anonymity unless you say you don't mind. Of course, Dick guy named Dick used to have a very cute one. If there are any non-alcoholics here, I'll make a little bargain with you. I won't tell anyone I saw you here if you don't tell anyone you saw me here. But I think we have to be a little bit sensible. Personally, I get very uptight at an AA meeting when everyone goes around as Bob M. and Joe C. And if you've ever tried to get a patient admitted to a hospital or cop a plea with a judge, you know that there is a practical side to anonymity. They don't understand what we mean. Certainly any member is entitled to remain anonymous and his membership confidential as long as he wants it to. And we should respect it, and there are people in professions who need this. Usually they find the time when they're comfortable, but it's their choice and their decision and not ours. So let's be careful of the other fellow's name. But I think all of us, and certainly I know it's true, can afford to tell a doctor who understands alcoholism, who perhaps have helped us, a good clergyman that we sought when we were fumbling, even a neighbor, or perhaps an employer. And this is an area that can be touchy. You have to use a little judgment. But certainly, I think we owe it to him to tell him about what happened to us, what we found, and let them know that if they have another one like us, call us up. We'd be willing to try to help if we can. I don't feel this is breaking our anonymity. I feel this is something we owe. Some years ago, we did a survey. We asked a number of people what they thought of Alcoholics Anonymous and what they thought of members of AA, and the answers didn't please us. So we tried it again and got the same answers. Everyone loved Alcoholics Anonymous, thought it was the greatest thing in the world, and heard great things about it. As far as the members, they thought we were unsocial, unreliable, weak, emotionally immature, not the kind of people they'd like to know. And it suddenly dawned on us what had happened. This is what we were when we were drinking, and now we're sober and we've molded into the woodwork. So let's let people know that we have rejoined the human race and want to be a part of it. I do suggest to you that you look at the November Grapevine, because it's a rerun of many of the classics. November is Gratitude Month. There are some excellent articles about what we're talking about today. And there are also some good stories, and I'd like to share a little one with you. You know, many people who speak a language other than English have a heck of a time with the English language, all our little cliches and all. It doesn't mean the same when it comes up. We have trouble with Spanish people because surrender is a dirty word in Spanish. So we have to find a word that means strength, but the same thing, the strength to ask for help. This is a cute one about Russian and English, and they put the computers to work, and they asked the computer to translate the English cliche, "The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak." And the computer worked hard, and it came out like this: "The liquor is fine, but the meat has gone bad." You know, one of my favorite people, and I'm a jazz buff, a man I've loved, who travel miles to hear, is Louis Armstrong. Louis said a number of things, and one or two apply to AA, or us, our kind of people. He said, "If many people know the words, but they never learn the tune," that's important in AA. He has a cute one here: "I got a simple rule about everybody. If you don't treat me right, shame on you." So have a good weekend. It's a beautiful one. I don't know what you're all doing here when you could be having a nice trip outdoors, but thank you for coming. Thank you, Louis.
Thank you, Bob. I was just going to say that those cards with the question marks that were on the seats were intended for questions, if anybody, you know, for the second half of the program. But if everyone is sitting on them, we don't want everybody to get up. So we'll probably be taking questions from the floor. One other thing is that we do have copies of the article "Let the Bum Find Us" from the October Grapevine available here at the table. So if anybody cares to take one after the meeting, they're welcome to it. Our next speaker is Lucille. Let's welcome Lucille.
Thank you very much. And Robert is a tough act to follow. But he said to me, they're a good audience, so relax. And I'm going to try to. My name is Lucille, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Lucille.
I got stuck on a panel with three guys, and I thought, no way. I would like today to address the females. And so if you men will just be a little bit patient, I'm going to take my 10 and talk to the gals. The law books of ancient Rome included a statute ordering the death penalty for women who drank alcohol and were adulterous. The law clearly reflected societal attitudes about women and alcohol. For women and drinking, morality went hand in hand. Female drinking was intolerated, even to be punished by death, and this statute was enforced throughout Rome. The laws have changed, but the underlying attitudes have not. Alcoholism is still considered a moral problem by many, since women are still judged by the double standard of morality. Their alcohol problems are judged harshly. Where a man may be judged weak-willed, the woman is usually considered immoral, promiscuous, and sometimes even unnatural. Many women avoid seeking help to protect themselves from society's hostility and censure. And even if the woman has a family, the husbands and children are more likely to protect her and themselves from the public exposure than to encourage her to seek help. 50% of our women are in homes, and their productivity isn't logged. And the other 50% who are working very often are never referred to special programs, or there's a reluctance to refer. The court system has oftentimes let our female compatriots off easily. Many times the charges are indeed dropped. The stigma hangs, and she will seek help for related problems, marital problems, financial problems, the instability and depression that accompanies the illness. They will run the gamut of marriage counselors and child guidance clinics and lawyers and therapists and clergy and doctors, and many of whom know very little about our illness. They run from agency to agency, from professional to professional, and never really get close to what they need. Most of the time, the doctors misdiagnose, and we are considered nervous or depressed. And usually, we are prescribed Valium or Librium. And so we emerge from the doctor's office, the illness is unidentified, and a second potentially addictive drug is on that prescription in our hand. 67% of the prescriptions written for mood-altering drugs went to women in this nation this year. women are much more likely to be cross-addicted than men. Not all of the doors of the treatment centers are open to women. 9% of the halfway houses are for women, 35% are co-ed, and the rest are for men. The male orientation is largely because the co-ed services were there first, were originally set up for males, and then became co-ed. Alcoholism among women was not considered a serious problem, and there is a very low priority for alcohol research for women. Less than 20% of our treatment centers are directed by women. And I think that men are likely to be less sensitive to our needs. The lack of a woman role model makes recovery more difficult. Are women really sicker than men? Are women really more liable to slip? Does this reflect the difficulty in treating women, or does it reflect an inadequacy in our outreach and our treatment? For women with a problem, who is at fault? The person needing help or the helping system? How can we as females do more? Especially females in AA. Can we begin the real practice of public and community health? Can we prevent catastrophes before they happen? I think that our health system has long suffered from a repair shop mentality. I think that little attention has been given to providing us with the tools needed to maintain and promote health. In recent years, the cost, human and economic, of this system is staggering. We are turning more and more to self-help, like AA, for many of our problems. I think that we need an awareness about ourselves. For too long, we have dwelt on the needs of our husbands and our children and not too much on the needs of ourselves. I think we need to expand our roles. And I think the social reality of women's lives and the onset of drinking, problem drinking, the patterns and the problems, I think we must consider the stresses and the frustrations of daily life. And the sense of inadequacy that women feel in their position in the society today. I think we need to teach our daughters that they can be anything they want to be. And that for too long, the drinking behavior for females has been a mixed bag. Women shouldn't drink, and yet the sophisticated, mature lady in the black dress with Kostkov's vodka on the signs is there. I think that all of us in AA, all of us women in AA, have a responsibility. We should be ready to reach out to those who may be less fortunate than we. The single, the lesbians, the elderly, the low income, the minorities. These are women that are excluded from our community programs and services. I think we should work on self-development as we're taught in AA. I think we should improve interpersonal relationships, using our talents and our abilities to the best of our ability, to the fullest. And I think that we should develop our coping skills for the stress that fills society. I propose retreats for women. Why not? The men have been having them for years. When women are provided with an environment that ensures a sense of acceptance, security, and dignity, the woman with a drinking problem is able to overcome the myths, the stereotyping, and the prejudice which we have faced for decades. We are the best ones to help our troubled sisters. I think that we should try to give them the personal and the individual attention that they need, because we have been there and we know. We have come a long way, baby, but we have a long way to go. Thank you very much.
I agree with you, Lucille. When I was drinking, I always try to find something like a retreat to send my wife to on the weekend. Our next speaker is John C.
Good afternoon. Oh, those lights are blinking again. Every time I get honest, the lights blink. My name is John Callahan, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm glad I know it. And I'm glad to be here. Lucille talked about following, Robert, my friend here. I have a double problem. Robert's my sponsor. It's difficult to have a sponsor that will have 30 years of sobriety the 7th of November of this year. It's very difficult. Because he had 20-some years when I came in, and I thought that was a lot of sobriety or a lot of not drinking. I usually say, when I talk at an AA meeting or talk to people, I usually say, what I have to say is not my own opinion. It's the opinion of what I've heard, what I've seen, what I've read, and what I've felt in AA. But today, I'm going to try to give you something of my opinion on the subject of Let the Bum Find Us. And I'd like to do a little bit of my story, because I came to the realization that I had a problem with booze about 11 years ago. I went to see a senior vice president at the Aetna Life Insurance Company, and I told him I was in trouble. And he said to me, and I told him my story, and he said to me, he says, you're an alcoholic, John. And that's the first time anybody had ever called me an alcoholic, though I'd known I'd had a drinking problem for 30-some years. He said, I want you to go back to your desk and sit there, and I'm going to have somebody call you and talk to you about it, because he has the same problem. So I went back to my desk, and I sat there, and the phone rang, and I picked up the phone, and it was a vice president of the company that I've been working with for about 8 years. His name is Don, and he was Swedish, bright blue eyes, beautiful complexion, and about the nicest man I'd ever met in my life. And he said, would you like to go to Scholar's for lunch? And I said, no, I'm waiting for a phone call. And this nice, blue-eyed, wonderful, beautiful man that I'd known for 8 years said to me, he says, you dumb bastard, this is the phone call. We went to Scholar's, and God bless him, he said to me, he said, would you like a drink? And I said, I don't think so, Don. And he told me his story. And I've never forgotten that story, because I couldn't quite understand why a man would be sitting across the table from me, telling me the things he was telling me, unless he wanted to share something with me that he had, and he was taking this opportunity and this way of doing it. About two nights later, I met himself at the Sigourney Street group of AA in Hartford, Connecticut. He said to me, John, he said, sobriety gives the alcoholic a chance to be the person he's supposed to be. Never forgot that either. Didn't know what it meant then, but I never forgot it. I was taken drunk about 4 months later. And I spent 18 months drunk. But during that 18 months, that group let me come in and make the coffee. They wouldn't let me cut the cheese, but they let me make the coffee. I went to a hospital, came back. He's there. He said, now will you understand what I said, that sobriety gives the alcoholic a chance to be the person he's supposed to be. And AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, the love and the friendship and the program and the message is what can make that chance a reality. So I continue to make the coffee. Then he ups and retires and goes up into the country, and he kind of left me with the group. Next thing I know, I'm a GSR. Next thing I know, I'm on the state committee. Next thing I know, I'm chairman of the Cooperation with Professional Community on the state committee. Why do I say this? I suddenly realized, after becoming the GSR and getting on the state committee, that that's where it's at. That's where this stuff is at. It's in the service work. It's in the service area. Because this is where we can do the world the most good. I also worked for a life insurance company for 31 years. I just retired a month ago. Early retirement, 62. After 31 years, 22 drunk and 9 sober. Got the same marriage record. 31 years with the same lady, 22 drunk and 9 sober. I asked the company many times for the last 4 or 5 years if I could be of some help in their program. Some help, I mean, to get the program out of the book and into practice. So they said about 5 years ago, yes, you can. So I become the drunken resident at the Aetna. They were treating the terminally ill by sending him down to see John on the first floor. I did do a lot of 12-step work within the company, trying the best I can, I could. But I suddenly realized that I could do more if I really could get into kind of a semi-professional area to carry and help that bum find us. So I did that. But they made me retire. Now I'm back as a kind of a consultant. So where are we? I personally believe, and I think the good doctor last night kind of touched on it, that we have to make sure that we carry the message. That ain't a message. It's the message. I think down at the GSR level, we have to make sure that we have a good PI committee, that the people who go out and speak on PI commitments have a knowledge of what AA is, what it is not, and have a pretty good idea of what the recovery process is. I think we're kind of ashamed of the recovery process. I think we get a little bit uptight when we start talking about spiritual awakenings. I think we start to not to believe ourselves. But believe me, we wouldn't be here sober if there weren't the steps and we hadn't practiced them in some way or other. So I think this is the message that we've got to get to the bum to help us find him. This is the message we have to get to the doctor. This is the message we have to get to the detox center. Because we don't have to go out and tell them about alcoholism. We don't have to go out and tell them about the statistics. But we do have to tell them that we have perhaps the only hope that the alcoholic has to make that sobriety give him the chance to be the person he's supposed to be. We have to understand what we're doing and what AA means to us. It took me a long time. I'm still learning. But if I have any message, and I've talked to doctors and to hospitals and to my own company, and it is that, if they have to be able to identify, help identify these people with these problems and get them into some kind of treatment and then let us work with the treatment people so that we can put this recovery process, this God-given thing, this spiritual thing that we've got here, the experience and the strength and the hope. The first step is experience. We admitted we're powerless and our lives are unmanageable. The second step is the strength. Power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity. And that hope, the hope to turn our lives and our will over to the God of our understanding. Not that hope that it's going to be a nice day tomorrow so we can rake leaves. Or not the hope that somebody's going to win a ball game. But that hope that's for the hopeless. And baby, that's where we were. We've got it here. We got the procedure and we got the process, or we don't call it, even put it in their words, but we've got the way to sobriety. We shouldn't be ashamed of it. And we should try every single way we can in our own personal lives and within the groups, the GSRs, the state committees, to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous so the bums can find us. The question, must we? Sure we must. Shall we? Sure we shall. Do we? I'm going to leave that one up to you. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much, John. Now we'll accept questions from the floor. As I say, we've kind of given up on the idea of the question cards. Would anybody like to address any one of the speakers? Please raise your hand. Did I see a hand raised over there, Maris? Does anybody have any questions? Here.
I have a question, but I don't know how to work. How do we go about, as we're talking to a professional or a medical person, a psychologist or whatever, and they are frustrated. They expect AA to be able to do everything. They have done everything they can, they feel, and why why can't I give an exact answer how it works? For instance, I have been asked, well, why can't you people come into the emergency room and help these people if you claim that you want to help the alcoholic? And these are the people that the police have picked up, and because of the no intoxication arrest now, the emergency rooms are getting jammed. Seeing it in a lot of areas in my life where I'm taking the drunks in. I can't take them to CHEP. They're medically unfit. CHEP wouldn't even take them. They have to go to the hospital. The hospitals, in turn, are saying, why can't AA come in? And in essence, for me, it would be babysitting for the active drunkards. We can't talk to them anyway. And this is where I'm having a difficult time explaining why I myself will not go in and sit around to keep the drunk quiet to keep the emergency from happening. Does anybody understand what I mean?
Well, I believe that the question here is, can AA, can we in AA do anything to assist those people in the emergency rooms of hospitals who are possibly having troubles with someone who is, very sick, requires a detox? Is that correct?
No, they can detox. They will admit that what they're saying is they're getting the chronic person back every Friday night, every Saturday night. They know they're alcoholic. They know they're going to drive them out. The guy's going to go out and he's going to be back next week, next month. And if AA is so great and we can save these drunks, why aren't we in there talking AA to them when they're drunk?
Bob is going to try to answer this question.
Well, we do need their help because for a long time there wasn't such care, and certainly we want to maintain a feeling of working with them, but I think you point out the tremendous need to sit down with staff and administrative personnel, nurses and doctors, and tell them very plainly and simply what AA can do and what it doesn't do. Actually, they're asking you to do something that's their bag. We're not pink ladies, wet nurses, and this is their job, and as kindly as you can, you have to remind them that that's their job. They certainly wouldn't ask us to come in and take care of their heart patients who are brought in, or their diabetics, or their broken legs, and it's on the same basis. However, we do have to indicate that within our ability as Alcoholics Anonymous, we want to cooperate in any way we can, perhaps to visit them in the ward later when they're slightly less fuddled. Sometimes in some of the hospitals that really have an alcoholic unit, we suggest a possible AA meeting in the unit for the alcoholic patients. And also to try to develop, once this is established, that we don't just dump them in there and forget them. We look them up when they're ready to come home and bridge that gap. This is what they're crying for. Several hospitals in the Hartford area have good alcoholism programs for detoxing, and they call and say, we sober them up, but 2 weeks later they're back drunk. What can AA do? We can participate because there is a need to bridge the gap, but it has to be done very soundly and sensibly. I think one of the things that's most effective, if you get a doctor or a staff person who is interested, is to tell your story. As simply and not a long-winded drunkologue, but the high points of where you were, how you came to AA, and what you found. This brings it home as well as anything. I think you have to personalize it to some extent to indicate it comes through that this is what you believe and you have faith in. And, John, you have some experience, too, and thoughts.
I don't really know the answer to this, but... I suggest perhaps that sometime we're going to have to get into the area of the recovered alcoholic who's not in AA, who can be of some assistance in these hospitals, in a kind of a volunteer plan in the hospital. No. And let the hospital establish its volunteer program or its program within the hospital. And perhaps they should then get recovered alcoholics, you know, who are in AA but don't bring AA with them, that are, you know, that work within the hospital, are trained by the hospital people as to procedures and that sort of thing, and who then are part of the hospital staff, right? It's very difficult because you've got that hat thing, you know, which hat have I got on? But I really think that in a much broader context, I think we all, sooner or later, are going to have to do something as recovered alcoholics who are concerned citizens about situations and become involved in the various hospital centers, the various councils, the various things that are going on. I think we have to make ourselves known and make our input known to these people as recovered alcoholics. You know? But the problem is that everybody, you say you're a recovered alcoholic, everybody knows you're in AA, right? Right? But I don't know the real answer to that, but I think hospitals who have volunteer programs, you know, staffed by the hospital and getting people from AA to do volunteer work, if you want to call it that, as recovered alcoholics, you know, within the hospital setting or within a detox setting. And I don't have the answer to that, but I think this is a thing that we should really explore, the use of us as recovered alcoholics, you know, as people, as resources. I don't know, you know, I think hospitals are looking for it. If we could really find a way, because I've asked, many hospitals ask us for an inpatient meeting, you know, and if we don't get in there, they're going to tell them about Alcoholics Anonymous. And have you ever heard a non-alcoholic tell them about Alcoholics Anonymous? Okay, right? I think we have to get recovered alcoholics who can really keep that hat pretty straight and tell them about AA and what the recovery process is, and, you know, within the hospital setting, you know, and we be the meeting within there. That's my only suggestion. How you do it, that's up to a lot of us.
Very quickly, Brian, there are a number of models around the country. St. Luke's in Phoenix has one. There are several on the West Coast. Lutheran General in Chicago, Parkview. That have an effective program working on the manner that John is speaking of. It takes time, and you have to adjust it to the setting you have, but there are models that hospitals can get of fairly successful programs that they are asking for.
Most of the detox, most of the hospitals that have detox units here in the state have some type of recovery or therapy program to go along with it. This topic, you know, it's I just looked at it one more time here, and it kind of reads two different ways. Let the bum find us, or let the bum find us. And what we're trying to find out is what we can do to help people who are really looking for help, that are really down and out and are ready to do something new with their lives. Lucille, could you comment on some of the things that we are doing to help women alcoholics, the bedroom alcoholics, so to speak, those who don't drink publicly, help them to recover?
Well, I think my concern as an AA member with this problem of alcohol and women began when I was recently at a conference where there is a movement on, and some of you may have heard about it, for women in sobriety. This is a task force that is being formed in every state for women who, for reasons, cannot make sobriety in AA. Now, I'm not going to tell you how that hit me the first time I heard it. I was asked to attend, and I did, and I listened, and I assessed, and I was at a loss because I didn't have that problem when I came into AA. Never crossed my mind that I was being discriminated against or that there was any chauvinism. But as I came away from that convention and I listened and I saw the momentum that this was getting, I thought, well, there must be some reason why women are reluctant or slower to come out to AA. And that's why I wanted you to become aware today, all of you females, and to go out of here, to go back home, to back to your communities, and think about that, and think about some things that we can do that might change this. The task forces, I think, at the meetings here in Connecticut have been a pretty fair percentage of recovered alcoholics and women in the treatment field. But I don't think there's any reason why women can't make it in AA. I think, as was mentioned here, that recovered women have a responsibility. I began by volunteering my services in a halfway house for women. That's how I got interested. And it was the most rewarding experience of my life. And that halfway house was oriented on AA all the way, 100%. And I just think that there's a lot more we can do. I don't think enough is being done. In Meriden Wallingford Hospital, I understand they have a successful program where they do have alcoholics in emergency, and they have a couple or three or four beds, I don't know how many, extra beds. Al Stearns knows more about that. He's been in on that. And I know we tried it in St. Mary's Hospital in Waterbury, and that was funded by the government, having recovered alcoholics in emergency to handle. Now, the problem got into who was on duty in the ER that day and what the doctor's attitude was. In my work, we educated our doctor in very slow ways by teaching him about alcoholics and sending him articles that would come through the newspaper, by feeding him AA literature, by introducing I didn't consider it promoting. It was educating. And I don't know, it's a very fine line, but I think that we women need to go home and think about this. I think we really need to think about getting more involved in ways. Yes. Right. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, yes.
Should we allow ourselves to be solely known, stay on our job, right?
Okay, thank you, Ed. Ed brings up the point, you know, the first question is, you know, should we just let everyone know that we are members of Alcoholics Anonymous? And secondly, should we step in to situations where we know a problem definitely exists and attempt to help in those particular situations? So, Bob, would you want to address that?
No.
Bob says no, but I'm sure you meant yes.
Well, there are no blueprints in AA, and thank God there aren't. You play most of these things by ear, and you use common sense. I certainly don't, well, I can't say that anymore. I don't go around with AA on my sweatshirt, but a nice car dealer friend of ours really blew it for us a year ago on when we bought a new car from him. He's a member of AA, and when we got back from our annual trip in Maine, he said he'd like to see Eleanor. He had something for her, and she went up and he said, you know, your license plates are pretty old and it's pretty hard time on. I got your new set. They're AA3. And I kind of worried a little bit about it, and of course some of my good friends spoke about it, and I do have an enlarged picture that we put in the back window when we go on long trips out of town, but no, I think you use your own good judgment about who you tell you're a member of AA. There are many times you simply say you are a recovered alcoholic and you don't drink and you know something about alcoholism that might be helpful. On the job, you have to know your employer. More and more employers are aware and are concerned and realize that they have an employee going down the drain that's costing them dough, and they are interested. Some might be the, if you did it too openly, would be a good excuse to give you the pink slip they've been waiting to do for no good reason. So you have to use good judgment and common sense. As far as stepping in to a family or a good neighbor or what, here again, use your common sense. I know that in AA we say it doesn't do any good unless the person who has the problem calls, and it probably doesn't. On the other hand, my own experience, I certainly didn't walk in and say, here I am, I want to be a member. I was pushed, shoved, dragged, and cajoled, and I don't think many of us came any other way. And somebody sowed a seed. We knew where it was and where to look for it. We didn't know what it was all about. And I went to my first few meetings with a couple of drinks. I didn't know what these clowns were all about. And even after I went, I didn't think much of them. They didn't say anything about the fact I had a drink. Directly, they were sneaky. They'd say, well, if you want to stay sober, come next week. And or strange thing about it, when I came to AA, honestly, my wife and I talked, and she said, what do you think of the AA? And I said, great bunch of people. And she said, aren't they the same ones you didn't like? And I said, yeah, but they've changed. And doesn't that happen? No, I had an experience just this past week of a young girl calling up about her brother, who's in real trouble with booze. She took him home off a barroom floor the night before. He's complaining. Their father was a drunk, and he said, here I am doing the same thing to my kids that our father did to us. What's the matter with me? And she said, would you talk to someone? And he said, no, of course not. It's my problem. I'll handle it. She said, would you be willing to talk to someone? And he said, no, mind your own business. It's my problem. And she called and said, can AA do anything? Well, fortunately, I have a hard-nosed little guy about his age, and I explained it to him. I said, you may get a belt in the mouth, or you may tell hit the road, but if you don't mind on those terms, you might sow a seed. He might call you some morning when he's sick and hungover. Who knows how it works? Who knows when the morning is coming that one of us, it was different. And thank God someone believes us on that day. So I that's my feeling. That's not necessarily AA's, but and I've had some wonderful experiences. I have been thrown out. I got the Purple Heart from a good drunk. He belted me after I took him all the way to Beach Hill. And he had a drink of Pracky, and naturally he felt good then. So play it by ear is all I can say. Okay?
I got something I want to share.
Yeah.
My name is Rick Pinkney, and I am an alcoholic. Hi. And I want to share this because he brought back some memory. I do quite a bit of 12-step work in Washington, D.C. And a doctor from Walter Reed called me one afternoon, and he would like for me to take him to D.C. So I called him, and he said, yeah, he's going to go. He feels like he has a problem. But you have to take his wife with you. So I said, okay, you take your wife around. I took this fellow for 6 weeks, so meeting every night, him and her. And at the end of the 6 weeks, I said, well, now, you know where the meeting are, and I have done all I can do. So from here on, this is your bag. He said, okay, Mr. Pinkney, I really appreciate what you have done. And I will meet you at these meetings, because now I know where to go. I said, okay, take it easy and I'll see you at me. I left. And this guy's wife called me and said, Mr. Pinkney, I heard you talking to my husband yesterday afternoon. And you told him where to go. And I said, yeah. She said, I don't think he is that bad. I don't think he needs to go. So, okay. A couple of weeks later, the guy got drunk. And she called me, Mr. Pinkney, you better come back and get him now. I told her, no, this is your bag. You know where to go.
Yes, we have a gentleman in the back.
Hi, Bill.
Hi, Bill.